The Vibes! Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26. I know that Thursday episodes are going to be the guest episodes. We had a bit of a scheduling mix-up this week, but don't worry. We brought you Isaiah Thomas last week. Next week, just stay tuned, trust me. But myself, Mawutsi, and the legendary Coach Brennan Sir, every episode with Coach is like a guest episode because we are in.
That's the way I feel, Mo. You know, I mean, last year with BJ and then me in the playoffs and stuff, the idea of two people talking basketball in the end of October is awesome. And I'm excited for our discussion, which we prepped for this week.
Absolutely. I mean, the NBA season's got off to a fantastic start, as we've been talking about. But the Eastern Conference, which everyone expected to be essentially a two-horse race between New York and Cleveland, has begun. Obviously, seasons begin in certain ways and then things filter out over time. However, there are a few teams we must discuss who have got off to a very, very hot start to the season. We're going to begin right at the top with the 4-0 Philadelphia 76ers. I feel like over time, we've all become immune to the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, they have a great team on paper, and then when it gets to the playoff time, they fall apart, and there's injuries, and there's this, and there's that. However, this year, with Embiid playing limited minutes, they have still started the season 4 wins, 0 losses. Tyrese Maxey, through those first four games, has over 150 points and over 30 assists. Do you know the only other player other than Maxey to do that through their first four games in the modern era?
No.
It is amazing. The one and only Mr. Russell Westbrook in his 2016-2017 season.
How about that?
Yep. He's absolutely balling right now. Tyrese Maxey has always shown the signs that he can become a star one day, and now he's starting to prove it in reality. But the true bright spot for this Sixers team is the draft pick that they selected in Vijay Edgecombe, who had an electric NBA debut against the Boston Celtics. And, you know, I remember when the Sixers drafted Michael Carl Williams, and he had a fantastic triple-double NBA debut. But then he kind of, you know, he had a good year, but it wasn't quite that every night. So I was a little bit worried, can Vijay do this every game? And it turns out he can. He's an amazing electric player. Coach, what are you seeing from this young man?
Well, this young man who played 1 year at Baylor University is from the Bahamas, which is not a hotbed for basketball, but we have several NBA players from the Bahamas and have come from there. And the thing that really impresses me about him, he's got an incredible body. He's got I look at Michael Jordan. I saw some clips of him as a rookie last night. And then I look at him when he became a champion, and it's like a physical transformation. This guy looks like Michael at 28 years of age. I mean, this guy's got muscles everywhere. He's a great athlete. I think that he's just got that. Maxey is a player that is incredible in the open court. So you put Maxey and Vijay Edgecombe in the open court, it's a two-man fast break. It is electrifying. So I think what they've got, Nick Nurse has some really good athletes on his squad. And I think when they play smaller, I think they really have a chance to be competitive. Joel Embiid, who, you know, someone talked to me last night, an NBA executive, and said, I'm not sure he might be one of the best centers when healthy that we've ever had in the league. Can do everything. And they're right. Mm-hmm. But Joel has been battling these injuries, and now he's becoming frustrated, unfortunately, because the doctors, the medical people, don't want him to get hurt by overplaying, not playing enough minutes. So they have him on a minutes restriction and playing very few minutes. And therefore, he's frustrated, like, how do I get in a rhythm playing 2, 3, 4 minutes at a time? You really can't. But they're trying to protect that versus long-term health. It's a tough combination. But if they ever get everyone back, you know, they have a team, and I'm including Paul George, of course. That's a playoff team. If and when, we'll see.
Maybe, with no disrespect to Paul George, I'm more excited to see the return of Jared McCain, who would have been Rookie of the Year last year had he not got hurt, who they still have to return. But just going back to Embiid, who you just mentioned, I saw an interesting quote from Marcus Morris earlier this week. And he said, Well, I'm going to read the quote to you. He said, just coming from different teams and seeing people at that level work as hard as they did, but not really seeing him, talking about Embiid, doing the same. It kind of threw me off because his production still matched. Last year, he had 70. He didn't even warm up. Like, he came in 22 minutes before the game started, 23 minutes before the game started, and went for 70. So in his mind, it's probably like, man, I'm better than these guys without even having to do all of that. So when you see a quote like that from a player who's been in the locker room with him, questioning his work ethic, I understand he can be frustrated at the medical staff putting him on a minutes restriction. However, if you haven't taken the necessary steps in preparation for the game to be available and to be healthy, I don't think that you can be frustrated at the medical staff, because they're doing what they need to do to keep you on the floor on a nightly basis. I think there's a big conversation around load management, especially with Michael Jordan's segment on NBC the other night talking about load management. I think what people don't understand is players can play 82 games now. And people will always say, oh, but the game's more explosive. They've got to cover more ground on defense. They've got to do this, this, and that. Well, number one, they have better access to rehab, prehab, medical conditioning. Every player's got a masseuse. They've got state-of-the-art technology that never existed in Michael Jordan's day. They've got world-class private jets and travel. They've got personal chefs, dietitians, nutritionists. And the fact of the matter is, you could play all 82 games. You just have to play less minutes, and you don't want to do that because then your averages would go down and you want to go out there and fill the stat sheet. So for someone like Joel Embiid, personally, if I was in charge of the Sixers, I'd rather have him 82 games at 20 minutes a night rather than 41 games at 40 minutes a night. Because number one, for the fans, they will get to see him even if it's in less minutes. And number two, even though you don't get the game-to-game same rhythm because you're playing in shorter stretches, you get the rhythm of being available and playing for an entire season, so that when the playoffs come around, you've not sat half the season and it's not a shock to your system when you step on the court.
Mo, it's a great point. You know, I'm very big on, I don't want players to play if they have a serious injury. Obviously, if they break something or do something that the doctors, the medical people rule you out. But when you play 100 games a year, including playoffs, minimum, if you're a really good team, over half the games you're not going to be feeling well. You're not going to be physically feeling great. But you have to go through. And it happens in every sport, European football, American football. I mean, every sport, ice hockey worldwide. I mean, you get banged up. And so I think that rugby, my God, no equipment. Hard to believe. And so I think, you know, one of the biggest things, I think though, when you do have the injuries that Joel has had, you get very frustrated and it starts to work on your psyche, because when well, he's the most valuable player or first team all NBA. That's pretty tough not to swallow, that when you're not healthy. And you mentioned about coming in 23 minutes before the game. If you can go out and play as well as he did, I think everyone should come at 23 minutes before the game, okay?
But it's not about the playing well. It's not about the ability. Sure. The ability is never in question. It's people like LeBron. Like, I remember talking to Ray Allen about his preparation for the games. And Ray said to me, he would work out harder before the game began than he would play in the actual game. So he's breaking a full sweat in the weight room before the game, before the game even begins, to condition his body to be prepared for the contact, the impact of playing an NBA basketball game. So coming into 23 minutes before the game, yeah, he's got the ability. He's 7 foot. He can handle the ball. He can shoot. He can score on the block. However, it's, are you getting your stretching done? Are you getting your band work done? Are you getting your agility drills done? That's the issue.
No, obviously the NBA rules are you have to be in the locker room an hour and a half beforehand. I'm sure there was a traffic problem, etc. That's why it was a one-time thing. I'm covering for him. But I don't recommend it. That was a little joke on my part. But I think the biggest thing with Joel is I want to see our best players play, because I think it, like in any sport, you know, when you miss a top performer play, it just hurts the game, whether it be Zion Williamson last year. You know, you don't want to see these. There's a lot of players. you're going to get banged up, and especially early in a season because you've been off for a couple months, several months, not a couple, and things happen, especially with your hamstrings and things like that. If you break something, you know, you can't do anything about that, but strains and things like that. As a professional, you're required to, as part of your, you know, obligation as a pro, to take care of yourself and be prepared. I agree with you 1,000% on that.
And I just think, right, Wilt Chamberlain once played an average of 48.5 minutes a night because he played every game and overtime for an entire season. He averaged, he played 82 games numerous times, and he was doing it all in Converse sneakers with no cushioning, none of the technology we have today, you know, traveling on public transport. All of these guys have gone through so many hurdles to go out there and put on a show for the fans to grow the league. And I'm not encouraging anyone to play if they're legitimately injured, but we can't in good conscience say that everyone who sits out is always incapable of playing. There are some guys around the league who, maybe it's them, but maybe also with respect to the players, sometimes it's the team telling them that they shouldn't be playing because the team want to protect their quote unquote asset.
And nowadays, they're crazy to do that because that is taboo. You can be fined for it. And one of the things is that, more importantly, this is a business. And when you have people paying to see someone perform, whether it be a singer, a movie, or play that you're going to, you want to see the star perform. And so I think this is sports entertainment. Mm-hmm. At the professional level.
It's like,
and that's why I think they have a huge obligation, you know, and so I hope that happens. And I don't want any player to suffer a serious injury. You know, obviously a guy like Boston, you know, people are going to see the Celtics all year that bought season tickets to the Celtics game. They know in advance Jason Tatum's probably going to miss the entire year. But the other players, if you know, despite what the Celtics record is, they're coming out and they are playing 100% and they're playing hard. And as a paid customer, I think that's all you want. That's all you want is your team to play and give you everything.
For a casual fan, right? Coach, are you a fan of Destiny's Child?
I knew the person that she was married to.
Destiny's Child is a band, so I don't know which one you're referring to. It's Beyonce, Kelly Rowland, and Michelle Williams, right?
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of a different one. My bad.
But if I bought a ticket to see Destiny's Child and Beyonce didn't show up, she was out with load management, and it was Kelly Rowland and Michelle Williams, with no disrespect to Kelly or Michelle, I would want a refund for my ticket. The same way, if I'm a hardworking NBA fan who can maybe afford to go to one game a year, or an NBA fan across the world who's staying up late and paying for TV subscriptions to watch the games, you want to see, and obviously it's not always possible, but you want to see your stars player play. But let's not go down the path of too much low management talk. I do want to talk about another player on the Sixers who I told you about in the preseason, who I'm a big fan of, and he came up huge for them in the comeback win against Washington this week, and that's Adem Bonner, who is the Nigerian-Turkish player that they have. He's a backup center with Embiid on his minutes restriction. He's getting more chance to go out there and do his thing. On the defensive side of the basketball, the energy he brought to that game and to this team is just so infectious. It feels like everyone turns up a notch when he's out there on the court. He didn't really play much offense with the exception of a putback dunk, which kind of saved the game for them. But his ability to show up when his number's called upon has been really impressive for me so far this season.
I think they had the same thing last year with Yabusele, right? The guy that's on the Knicks now. I love those guys that play that hard. And again, players on the team respect that a guy like that, you know, I just think it's good. I think the big thing that we're seeing now, Mo, is that we're going to see a lot of young players get an opportunity to play, and we're going to see players develop during the year. And I think this year, even though it's a great draft coming up, I think there's going to be very few teams that are going to try to intentionally, like last year, I thought several teams tried to, you know, I don't want to use the word tank, but they purposely held players out.
Strategically positioned themselves for favorable lottery odds.
Yes, and I think there were a lot of injuries at certain parts of the year to really good players. So I don't think we're going to see that, even though it's a really good draft, because I think there's a lot of teams that haven't been in the draft that now know playoffs, I mean, that now have a chance to be in the playoffs. So I think that's going to, that's a good thing. But I think we're going to see, I am very excited, for instance, I know we were talking about the East, but I'm really excited about Lauri Markkanen. I really am impressed by him. He had a great Eurobasket, situation this summer. He plays for an outstanding coach in Will Hardy. And I think one of the things about him, he's a player that at 6'10", at least, the guy can shoot the three, can take it to the basket. And he's an incredible kid, Finland's finest. I mean, he went to school at Arizona, but this kid, he is so good. And I just am excited for him and some of the young players they have on that team in Utah with a great young coach.
Yeah, the Jazz have started off 2-1 as well. I think they shocked the Clippers on opening night. They beat the Suns as well, and I'm excited to see how that turns out. I'm excited to see Isaiah Collier return from injury as well, because towards the end of last season, he really impressed.
Went out and got a terrific guard, from the University of Florida National Championship team. And then I think Keontae George is playing very well. Yep. I think we're kind of waiting to see what Ace Bailey does. He hasn't been very good to start with.
He showed flashes in the preseason, but I think he just needs to find some rhythm there with what's going on.
They can play a very tall team.
Yeah.
In Utah with Markkanen at the small forward spot.
Which is where he should be, by the way.
And Nurkic is playing very well with that team. Mm-hmm. And they have Walker Kessler. So they have some interesting bodies to throw around there for a team like that.
Another team that's really caught my eye, and I think everyone slept on them, including us, in the preseason, is the Milwaukee Bucks, because they have had a fantastic start to the season, led by Giannis, who is putting up simply insane numbers. But before we talk about Giannis, there's two guys that have really caught my eye for the Milwaukee Bucks. Number one is AJ Green, who's been absolutely lights out shooting the basketball. He's been fantastic for them. Sometimes when you watch Milwaukee, you kind of worry where these threes are going to come from now, especially without Chris Middleton, but he's been fantastic. But Ryan Rollins, who stepped into the starting point guard role without Kevin Porter Jr., not just on offense where he's averaging like 15-4, but on defense as well. He had 4 steals against the Knicks. He's averaging, I think, over 3 steals so far to start the season. And I think those two guys at the guard positions for them have been fantastic.
I really didn't know anything about him. I'll be honest with you, and I'll tell you, I watched him last night, as we're recording this, and he was really, really good. He's got great size. Doc Rivers, my former point guard in Atlanta, has put together a really interesting team based around one star, but a really unselfish team. They move the ball. They play really hard. I like what they did. I don't know how they can sustain it. I don't know how good they are, but I like watching them play now. I really do. I think they have a good blend of youth on their team.
Rollins is younger than 13 of the guys picked in this year's draft.
How about that?
Yeah. Of course, we would be remiss to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks without one Mr. Giannis Antetokounmpo, who I'm just pulling up the stats right now.
Uh-huh.
It's simply unbelievable, because he's averaging 33 minutes a game, right? So we talk about minutes restriction or whatever it is. He's not having to play, 35, 40 minutes. He's averaging 33 minutes a game, and he's putting up 24, 10, and 5 in those minutes. He's in MVP form, and he looks unstoppable right now. No one has an answer for him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I've always admired about him, he shows up, he plays. And last night, in a big game, early in the year, big game.
But it was a big game because of the storyline that apparently he wanted to go to New York. So for him to come and make that exclamation mark, and he was on the court saying, "This is my city," for Milwaukee.
And so the thing that's so interesting about Giannis is that he was having fun out there. I'll tell you what, it's like anything else. It's great when you play in a place where everyone loves you and you're getting that love back and you're giving it to him. I think he's a great fit for Milwaukee. I really do. And, the guys won a championship. it's really hard to chase championships because so many things have to go right. Many players that have tried to chase him hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. But this guy's won it. He's you know, he's got a great contract coming, you know, kicking in, I think, next year. You know, and on top of it, he's got his two brothers on the team. How good is that?
He's living a
very close family, and it's great. I love it.
Giannis is one of my favorite players. He plays hard on both sides of the ball. He's shooting 70% as well to start the year, which is unstoppable basketball.
And I'll tell you what, I'm not sure I've seen a player cover as much real estate when he drives as much as that guy does. I mean, he's just incredible. Great long strip. Puts the ball on the floor incredibly well. I think he's actually gotten better in the last 2 years, mm-hmm. which is hard to say when you've been in the league.
MVP and defensive player of the year to get even better is crazy. It's like this year, the MVP race, I think for the first time in my memory, you have Giannis, Shea, Jokic, Wemby. There's like five guys that you
Austin
could even throw
Reeves.
In.
Austin Reeves, mate.
We're not
my guy.
Austin Reeves.
How about how 50% great is
of your
that?
Points from the free throw line. I'm not putting you in the MVP.
I just love that an undrafted player can come into this league, try to make it with the Lakers, and just really play his heart. And he's just, I love people that max their talent out. And that's what he does.
Yep. Yeah. You know, I love the story of Austin Reeves. I did not love how that game against the Kings was officiated. But we'll keep it moving from there.
Yes, I never talk about officiating.
Because right now as we record this, an absolute shock to myself is the Chicago Bulls being undefeated. Now, they ended last season 15-5. Whether that was just because it's the end of the year and guys aren't taking it seriously, and then they had the blowout loss to Miami in the play-in, which kind of shattered everything back to earth. But they've started out 3-0 to begin this year. Has that been a surprise? Because, Coach, I know you were a lot higher on the Chicago Bulls than I was. Is this a surprise to you? What are you seeing? Because I know we've talked about their bench on the last episode. What are you seeing from the Bulls?
I'm really high in their coach, as you know. I'm really, Billy Donovan and I are very close friends. And I've known him since he was coaching at Florida for the last 25 years. We've been close friends. He's a Hall of Fame inductee this year. He's so good for the game of basketball. He's one of, in my opinion, he's one of the five or seven best coaches in the league, which people would say, well, big deal. No, you have 30 of the best coaches in the world, and you're one of the top five, and you're not winning. And I'm not talking about championships, you know, as the reason I'm picking you. He's got a great influence over the game. He coaches the right way. He's got great temperament, but his team plays incredibly hard. An amazing, amazing statistics is the last year, even with a kind of a roller coaster year, you know, they finished, I think, in the top three offensively. So he really has figured out how to coach offense in this league. He doesn't have a good defensive team. And yeah. So far, and that's, you know, because he doesn't have shot blockers, but he has athletes, he has perimeter players.
Well, the thing is, they don't have a true identity. Like, they don't have elite shot blockers. They don't have elite point of attack defenders like they used to be, Alex Caruso. They don't have a go-to scorer like a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or a right. Giannis. But what they're doing is they're running 10, 11-man rotations for 48 minutes. It's a five-out offense. They're gunning in transition. They're moving the basketball. They're moving bodies. They're playing with the foot on the gas pedal all the way down from the first tip-off to the final buzzer. And it's just annoying for other teams to play against a team that plays like this. That's the, like, watching the Chicago Bulls, you know, if I was an opposing team fan, I would just be annoyed. I'm like, it's October. Why are these guys playing so damn hard? And I love it.
Well, you know what else? They've developed depth there. So they have, as you said, they have over 10 players to play in a game, which means if you don't have a Giannis, a star, if someone's out, you know, you got guys that can play and they're used to playing.
And their most used player right now is Josh Giddey, who's a pass-first player. He has the highest usage percentage on a team, and he's always looking to distribute the basketball, throw the go-ahead pass in transition. So I'm really enjoying this start to the season for the Bulls. The question is, though, is it sustainable throughout the oncoming NBA schedule?
You know, I think that's one of those things that what you learn as a coach in this league for so many years is that you can only control what you can control. You can't control if your best player gets hurt. You can't control if your best player fouls out in a game. But what you can control is what you do offensively and defensively, how hard your team plays, and are they prepared? Those are the things. And do they play with a high basketball IQ? Those are the things I'm looking for. And that's how I evaluate coaches in this league, how your team plays based on the way you want them to. And when I see that, I get excited. So I'm very, very bullish on the Bulls because I like the way they're playing. They're doing up to the speed. I like the way Kenny Atkinson's teams play at Cleveland. I like Mazzulla's teams because of the way he has now said, this is the way we're going to play. And I love it. I love it because he wants them to have an identity, and I think that is great. I think Mike Brown is doing the same thing in New York. He's changing an identity, and even though they lost last night, they played really well at points during the game, really well.
Well, anytime you look at a hot start for a team, you have to look at kind of outlier shooting from opponents. And the Bulls' opponents have shot just 26% from behind the arc this season. The Bulls have done a good job. They limit them to just 26, 27 threes a game. And they're shooting a low percentage. But all of the guys in Chicago are defending on a string. And I think a big factor of this low shooting percentage is the tired legs of their opponents. So these guys have come into camp, into the preseason, well-conditioned, cohesive. And you're seeing them reap the benefits of all of that preparation. Like the offense isn't a hugely efficient offense, but their defense is, like I said before, it's just annoying. That's just the way I see it.
I believe they were 28th last year in defense, and that was a point of emphasis going into camp, so I'm glad. Now when the players say, you know, coaches always say, we got to play defense, but now when they see the results that they win, they're buying into what the coach has been preaching, you know, which is good.
And I spoke about this before on the show. One of my picks for most improved is Matas Pozuelos. And I've been told I've been pronouncing that incorrectly, so please forgive me. But I really think, you know, just how dynamic he is in transition, on defense as well. He can block shots, contest shots. I'm really excited about him and how his game can develop. And I love his mentality because I remember in the pre-draft process before he got drafted, I think he was calling out guys to play him one-on-one in draft workouts and no one wanted to play him.
Interesting. Well, you know, he's a Chicago kid, even though he's Lithuanian, I believe, by descent. He's been born here and stuff, so he's really a U.S. kid. But he's got a lot of swagger for a young guy. But, you know, he was humbled the other night, didn't have a good performance and stuff like that, which is going to happen to young players. But, you know, what you find out in this league is when you do talk, all of a sudden, you're on the radar. So he's going to see a lot of tough matchups, especially at the position he plays. And that's where, be careful what you say to guys like Durant, Giannis, et cetera, because they're right around the corner.
Yeah, it's all well and good talking trash to
Aaron Gordon. You know, you better be careful what you say to those guys.
But another team that's really impressed me with a new style of play this season has been the Miami Heat, who have started out 3-1. And the most surprising part of this whole thing for me is Eric Spoelstra is, you know, when Eric Spoelstra does something in the NBA, a lot of people tend to follow what he does. And it's kind of reminding me a bit of what the Pacers did last year. They're basically not calling any plays on offense for the Miami Heat. They're not running many picks either. You know, most teams are dominated by pick and roll. But their offense has led the NBA so far. I think they're putting up like 130 points a game through their first four games. And their own team score at least 140 twice. Their offense has been fantastic, and it's without Tyler Herro because, like we mentioned about not having a star player or just having one star player, because they don't have a guy who needs a lot of basketball, it's a free-flowing offense, and everyone's going out and getting theirs. What have you seen?
A great observation. Spo is someone I've known since he was, you know, in high school. You know, when we used to play Portland, he was our ball boy. And, you know, so I've known him since then. He was a terrific player himself, but then when he came and worked for Riles, he came in the league as a video coordinator, really learned everything about the league. Incredible, incredibly smart guy, very high basketball IQ. He was one of the first guys to be very innovative, to, you know, use his own in the NBA. He also went out and studied football coaches to figure out what makes football what can I steal from football, American football, mm-hmm. to be where, you know, you learn from coaching is coaching. So he learns from other coaches. So he learned a lot there of what to do in an environment to create, to tempo to play at. And I think, you know, you see Mazzulla doing that with our favorite coach over in the Premier League in Pep. You know, he studies and is friends with. I think it's really good. But I think Spo, you know, the USA Basketball, which is the governing body for all of our national teams here, you know, made a brilliant decision in making him our U.S. men's national team coach for the 2028 Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I think this is really, the guy had so much credibility as a world champion coach, and he was a gold medal assistant last year for the U.S. team. But I think Spo, as a head coach in 28 in L.A., will just be incredible. And I think when you have that, everyone in basketball looks at you even differently. We all acknowledge that he was one of the two or three best coaches in our league, but now it just even goes higher. And your games get refereed differently by referees because they know who you are. But he has a great personality, a great temperament. I don't know what a player's coach is, but I know he's one of them, okay? Mm. And, you know, he's not afraid, whether you're LeBron, Jimmy Butler, or whoever, to coach you, which you have to do as a coach. You have to be a leader, and you have to have toughness and courage, and he's not afraid to do that. But I think he's also one of the smartest guys, and he's always innovating, and I think that's what he's doing this year.
Yeah, much like the Chicago Bulls, the Miami Heat are playing extremely fast. They actually lead the NBA in pace so far. And I love it. Khalil Ware is a player that I was very high on before he was drafted. I thought Miami got an absolute steal with him. And they put him in the starting lineup so that Jovic can come off the bench and be kind of a point forward. And then guys like Hakez are just doing amazing work on their downhill drives. They're really pushing the ball, whether it's off a missed shot from the opponent, whether it's off a turnover. Even when they're inbounding the basketball, they're just pushing the ball up before the defense has a chance to get set so that they can drive into the gaps and really cause the defense to get in rotation, create cross matches, so on and so forth. And one of my favorite players in the NBA, because coach, you know I love defense, is Davion Mitchell. I think defensively, I don't think you can name five guys that are better defenders than Davion Mitchell in the NBA right now.
Well, he's the most important part of defense, Mo, in basketball is the ability to contain the basketball, not get beat off the dribble anywhere on the perimeter. And Davion Mitchell excels at that. The problem we have, I'm sorry?
You know what they call him, right? His nickname, Off Night. Because if you go into that building, he's guarding you, you're going to have an off night.
I love that.
The problem we have, continue.
Okay. So I think one of the things, and he played at Auburn, you know, who was he drafted by?
Sacramento Kings.
Sacramento Kings.
Who was he traded by?
And this guy, I mean, he's a pit bull. I hate to say, I mean, defensively, and I love that. Made some big shots in the playoffs last year. But this guy, you know, and everything in the NBA and in college basketball, anywhere in the world, starts with defense. But it starts on the guy that's guarding the ball. If they get by the first line of defense in any sport, but especially in basketball, all the problems now start. Big men getting in foul trouble, big men offensive rebounding, wide open threes on cross-court passes. And so this guy gives your defense a chance. That's what I love about Mitchell.
Now, staying in the East, the Charlotte Hornets have started 2-2, which isn't crazy, but it's better than what a lot of people expect from the Charlotte Hornets franchise. I know you want to talk about LaMelo Ball, but how about Konkanupul? The most three-pointers to begin the season from a rookie since, well, he scored 16. The previous record was 13, held by Keegan Murray of our Sacramento Kings, who had 13 in 2022.
Wow, did not know that.
Shooting the lights out.
Konkanupul, every time I watched him last year, I kept saying, I'm not sure this body of his translates to the NBA. Just not sure. But I'll tell you what, obviously, I'm way wrong. And he plays huge minutes. He's playing great right from the get-go. Plays incredibly hard. But you got to understand, he's just 19 years old. Mm-hmm. To do that in a men's league, it's really hard. Shocking.
I think an underrated thing that a lot of young people who play basketball need to learn about is playing off 2 feet. It's a lot of his footwork, even though he might not be the most athletic and have the body that's suited to the NBA. You even see this with Jalen Brunson. When he goes and he gets 2 feet in the paint, then he can use pivots and be crafty off of that. The playing off 2 feet and finishing off 2 feet gives you an advantage on the offensive side of the ball when you lack that athleticism or the size that you would need otherwise.
Not every basketball coach at the collegiate level teaches that. Jay Wright, who used to coach Villanova, was premier. But John Shire, the very young head coach at Duke, it's one of his core teachings offensively. And you know what? You can tell that fundamentally, kid's incredibly sound. I wasn't sure he was going to be able to guard people, you know, but he is. He's a tenacious defender in that he really works at it. I just think Charles Lee is his second year former Boston Celtics world champion, head coach, assistant coach, I'm sorry. He was there with Ime and with Joe. And I'm telling you, this guy is, he's got incredible personality, people skills. He's going to be an incredible coach in the league. And so last year he was getting baptized as a injuries, all that stuff that happens as a first time coach. Everything you think that can go wrong goes wrong. And this year he seems to have his footing and he's got a healthy team. And boy, they're playing good.
How about LaMelo Ball, though?
I'll tell you what, I was thinking about him the other day. The guy is a triple-double machine. If he misses a triple-double, it's usually by one rebound, one or two assists. The guy is absolute highlight film every night. He's box office. He's one of those guys you pay to go and see play. He's that entertaining. I thought about it last night. I'm saying to myself, I think that they played Miami, and they got their butt kicked. Mm-hmm. But I'm sitting there saying, Eric Spoelstra's sitting there saying, you're going to be my guard in the Olympics. You're going to be one of my guards. I really do, because he's an LA kid. I think he's really going to be a terrific player on the Olympic team. So I'm going to be watching him the next couple of years going through the process. Hope he can stay healthy. That has been his only downfall in the league. And also, he's a little allergic to defense for a while.
I think what Charles Lee's done on defense this season, rather than having him kind of stick to his matchup, he's got him more in the passing lanes to go for those steals so they can get out there in transition and be himself. Because LaMelo is a player who loves to play freely. You know, he might be shooting a shot from the logo. He might be trying to reverse jelly layup or whatever he might be doing. He loves to play free, and the best time to do that is in transition. So he's been given more freedom on the defensive side now to really hunt those passing lanes and disrupt offense that way. Obviously, he's not the greatest defender in the world. He's never going to be like an elite NBA defender, but he's averaging 2 steals per 36 minutes through his first 3 games in the NBA this year. And I think that's a great sign for LaMelo. And he's one of those players who, you know, it's easy to just not pay attention and throw him in the basket of a good player putting up empty numbers on a bad team. But as the team around him gets better, they got Brandon Miller, now they've got Knipple. I don't know if Knipple is right. It kind of sounds weird to say that. But
I like the way you say that, though.
What, Knipple?
Sounds good.
But like now he's got a knockdown shooter who's spacing the floor and giving him more room to operate. I think as the team around him gets better, he's going to be able to throw away that tag of, oh, LaMelo just puts up good numbers on a bad team. I think, you know, if the Charlotte Hornets continue down this path and, you know, continue improving the roster with young players like this, I think they can one day be a competitive team in the Eastern Conference.
I agree. Mo, can I talk about one disappointing team in the East? And that's our Orlando Magic. I really like them. I like the team they put together. They've lost 3 straight games.
They're very confusing to me right now.
Yes, and I really like them. I like their coach. I love Franz Wagner. I like so many of the players. I love Paolo Banchero. I mean, I like their team. Desmond Bane, all in on that guy. I mean, so I'm really surprised. Jalen Suggs, I believe, is healthy. So I'm a little confused.
Paolo's really struggled to shoot the basketball to start this year. He's shooting 18% from three, 39% from the field. And that's obviously something that can pick up. Maybe it's just a slow start to the season. Maybe he finds his rhythm. Desmond Bane was obviously brought there to shoot more threes, as that's an area they've lacked in. He's not getting as many attempts as I would like to see him. I think he's averaging like five a game. I definitely need him getting like seven or eight a game. And then their usage of Franz Wagner, I'm not... like, he's such a good player, getting the ball, driving, creating, or scoring. I'm not seeing enough of it from him. I just am so confused by their offense and how it's being run.
Yeah, I got to study him, to be honest with you, because I've seen just a couple of minutes of him. I got to study him and see what's going on there, because I like everything about them right now except their record. You know, and I mean, but Banchero is going to be – you have two Olympians on your team. Think about that. You know, Banchero is going to be on the U.S. team in 28. And I think, you know, we're going to, and obviously, you know, France is on the German Olympic team. So, you know, you got premier type players. I think those, that's enough to get you, certainly you're a playoff team, but they're just not playing like it so far.
What do you make of the comparison that someone at ESPN made this week saying that Paolo Banchero reminds them of Josh Smith?
Oh God, take him off the air. I don't care who it is.
Josh Smith was a fun player to watch, but I do with respect to Josh
Smith. No. He could jump.
Yeah, he was a fun player to watch, but he wasn't like jump. The caliber of Paolo Banchero could one day be in MVP conversations.
That's what I'm saying. It's a joke.
Josh Smith was never in MVP conversations.
Horrific comparison. And if you tell me who it is, we should take him off the air.
It was Kurt Goldsberry from...
Oh, he's not even on. He's just a writer.
From the Zach Lowe.
That's why he's a writer or a podcaster. And you know podcasters. What do they know?
Oh, man. What do podcasters know, eh? What do podcasters know?
Kirk, come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. Jeez almighty.
Yeah, I think it's tough to make these assertions on players based off three games to start a year. Like, come
that's
on,
my
man.
Point.
We're not even 10 games in, 20. Like, PJ would always talk about 25 games in to truly take a look at things. Now, don't get me wrong. If we get to, you know, 25 games into the year and Paolo is still shooting 39%, I'm going to be a little bit worried of someone of his strength and his size not able to get easier looks. But I don't anticipate that these four games are indicative of how he is as a player.
No, that's why I said it's a surprise team to me, because I think they're really good. Really, really good. So, really surprised. And
the
they've lost a couple of home games too, which is all more surprising.
Yep. And, you know, it's primarily the core group has stayed intact. So, we're going to keep an eye on the Orlando Magic for you, because they're definitely a team we were both high on to begin this year. And you've got to also think about it. Like, we've just talked about five teams that are really good in the East to start the year. If someone's winning, someone has to lose.
Sure.
Someone's got to lose. So they are 1-3 currently, the Orlando Magic. They lost to the Hawks. They lost to the Bulls. They lost to the Sixers. Two of those teams we've talked about on this show and how good they've been to start the year. The Hawks, they lost in the final minute of the game. Paolo missed the game winner. If he hits that shot, the way everyone talks about him is different. The way their record looks at 500 is different. And the way that people talk about Orlando is different. And so the team they beat is the Miami Heat, who we were just gushing praise for about 10 minutes ago. So this is the NBA, right? We need some more time, see what these guys can do. Because if they can figure it out and get it together, they're going to be really dangerous. And hopefully they figure it out by January when they're over in London.
And I think, you know, a team that also is improved that we didn't even talk about last year is Washington.
Yes.
They're improved.
They're
competitive.
Keyshawn George in our last episode, who's been absolutely fantastic for them. They lost a tough one to Philly the other night.
Right.
Went right down to the wire. That was the game we referenced when we were talking about Adem and Tyrese. And also, I forgot to mention for Philly, Quinton Grimes. He had a little bit of an issue with his contract. He wanted more money than they got, so he's taking a bet on himself. And he's playing really well, especially late in games. He's hitting a lot of huge shots for them. And they continue to keep coming back from double-digit deficits.
He's a big-time player. He's a big-time player, and they should have gotten him locked up because... Well,
Dallas should have just never traded him for Caleb Martin in the first place, because I don't think I've heard Caleb Martin doing anything since that trade.
Yeah. So I think this guy's a really good player, so we're going to see what happens with him come free agency, but I really like him. And he did, when he got a chance to really play last year, he was fabulous.
Yeah. I also do want to get out of here giving a shout out to one of my favorite players of all time and a player who probably gets the most criticism out of anyone in the entire NBA. And that is one Mr. Russell Westbrook, who came into the Sacramento Kings with no training camp, no preseason. And he's been good. He's shooting 50% from three. He's averaging 12 points, six rebounds, four assists, and a steal every game. And he's setting the intensity and the energy. And I feel like we have to say it because everyone else in the media and a lot of the fans unnecessarily hate on Russell Westbrook. So any chance I get, I'm going to be singing his praises.
Yeah, well, you know, this guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer. We hear that. But the thing is, the guy has been there for like less than 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. He's the leader of their team. Mm-hmm. He's the leader of their team. The guy has, you know, when really big time leaders in any business or sport or, you know, walk into a room, they own it. That's what he does. And he's, for not going through camp and stuff like that, he's in great shape. You know, he's got one of those bodies. I think he's going to be able to play a couple more years, believe it or not. He's 37. I really do. But I love the way his attitude is. He's playing for the love of the game, not for money. That's mm-hmm. what I love.
This is what I can't get my head around is, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, as you said, but he was great in Denver last year. He was great for the Clippers. How he went the whole summer without anyone picking him up, especially contending teams that could have added his experience and his leadership, it blows my mind.
Well, I can tell you why. It has nothing to do with Russ. It has to do with people and organizations being scared of someone. They're scared. See, you have to be able to coach. The hardest thing to do in coaching in the NBA or mainly in the NFL and the NBA is to coach great players. The easiest thing to do is to coach guys that aren't that good because they'll do anything you tell them. The great players, you have to have incredible credibility. You have to have leadership ability. And you have to have incredible competence and the ability to connect with those guys. And so if you're not one of those people, you don't want to touch someone. And there's several great players like that. But if a guy like Russ, if you're not sure if you don't know him, you don't know if he's going to start, if he's going to come off the bench, some people don't want to touch him. I embrace a guy like that. That's why I thought Scott, BJ, Doug Christie were all smart in grabbing him. Because you just don't find guys like that. That's like getting a lottery pick, in my opinion, from a whole perspective of leadership, playing ability, showing younger guys in a team, this is what it takes. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Kudos
to going back to, you know, what we originally started talking about with Michael Jordan saying, you know, he wanted to show up every night for the fans who were there. Russell Westbrook is one of those players who wants to play in every single game possible.
Yep.
And that's a quality that you can't learn and you can't teach. You either have it or you don't.
And that's what I love about him. And I'm so happy for him that it's kind of worked out okay so far. You know, and I think that's one of the big things, you know, but I think, you know, Oklahoma City, with all the injuries they have, to come out of the gate with, you know, a record like they have, it really shows me a lot. They did it last year. They come out and they get a great start on the season. It really propels you.
Yeah. AJ Mitchell as well has been a fantastic bright spot for them. And they just find guys.
They do a Sam Presti and his staff do a great job of finding talent that fit their team. They might not fit every team, but they fit their team.
And although I do have to point out, you know, it's like, they do own all of the lottery picks and all of the draft picks in the world. So the chances of finding guys that work are pretty high when you have that many chances. Because there are some guys that didn't quite work out with them.
But he's picking second round picks that are making it.
Yeah,
Jalen Williams, the backup. This kid was a backup. Mitchell.
Scouting department is fantastic.
Yeah. But, so I really kudos to them. The team is built around two stars, in my opinion. You know, obviously SGA, Jalen Williams. Chet Holmgren, to me, is not a star. I don't care if he's a max player. He's not a star. He's a really good player on a great team. But he fits their team. And that's cool. But Sam has done a great job of getting all these guys, Case and Wallace, and all these guys that just know how to play and win. And I love that.
Absolutely. We're going to be back on Monday with more from the Hoop Genius podcast. So make sure that you stay subscribed and locked into the show, as we have a lot more on the way. So until next time, my good people, subscribe to the show. And as always, get buckets.